is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon. Thanks for being here today. Well, given all the fire news of the weekend and the hot temperatures, the August heat wave, that we bring Kyle Reed of the Douglas Forest Protective Association back in. Thanks for coming in this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
We were just talking here during the break about the hot temperatures and the wind today, because we've really, Roseburg has one of the lowest or the lowest wind velocities on average in the U.S., and 20 miles an hour is not that much wind compared to a lot of places you might live. But for around here, it's a little breezier than normal. And when you get a fire going, it tends to help spread them. And I guess it's already happening this afternoon.
Yeah, I literally just got a text while we were sitting here. It looks like we're responding to a new fire outside of the Riddle area on Glumbercloop Road. So more info to come on that later.
Wow. So you went back to high fire danger effective yesterday. Some people ask when you back down to moderate, I think on Friday or late Thursday, sort of why bother when you knew you were going back?
Yeah, so we got that question a lot, actually. And the answer is, you know, we got some moisture throughout most of the area Thursday when that system came through. And we wanted to give homeowners the opportunity to do some work on their property for a few extra hours a day. So, as you know, the public use restrictions are tied to the fire danger and those shutdown times. So during moderate fire danger, we were able to allow people to run power saws and chainsaws for a couple extra hours after that system went through moderated fire conditions. Again, we knew that was going to be a very short-lived event, but we want to give those people an opportunity to do some stuff around the house.
And I suppose if they get some of that done, that also lessens the danger, of fire on their property.
Yeah, exactly. We've talked about this many times on the air, defensible space and how important that is. We've had three examples this summer alone of fuels work that's been done by our crews in the wintertime that's paid off and, help stop fires very small.
And in fact, over the weekend, and we'll run through all the fires of the weekend in a moment here, but I recall in the release that you put out late yesterday or early this morning that there was one of the weekend fires where that made a difference.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, when I got in the office this morning, I found out that two of those fires actually had fuels work on them and made the difference in those fires being stopped small. And we can talk about that here in a minute.
So let's run through the weekend and what took place. I was in a lot on Saturday. I was in and out on Sunday. And it seemed like anytime I was here, it wasn't very long before I was hearing a call for a fire.
Yeah, so going back to Friday, we had a fire outside of Riddle out on the Cow Creek area. That fire was out between Riddle and Glendale, really rural area. Turned out it was in the fire scar from the 2017 Horse Prairie fire. We hit that fire very hard with aviation, knowing where it was located and what the potential out there was with the light flashy fuels. And we were able to get that fire knocked down between 2 and 3 acres. While we were getting that fire wrapped up, we actually had another fire. It was a structure fire in Tri-City that had spread to the surrounding vegetation off of Destiny Lane. So we had crews that were able to get to that and make sure that fire didn't spread any farther away from the structure than what it did.
Now, Saturday morning, the first fire I think I heard was mid-morning, and that actually resulted in, for about an hour, the closure of a section of Highway 138 West.
Yeah, that was a fire just out past Dodge Creek Stables out there up on the hillside. It started out as a structure fire that spread to the surrounding vegetation. This was actually the other fire that we had where we'd done some fuels work around the area, around that home, and talking to the guys and the gals on the ground, that fuels work made the difference in keeping that fire small. So we were able to get in there, with the fuels that we reduced and removed, and get that fire taken care of. That fire only burned about a tenth of an acre, and we were very fortunate because that wasn't a very good spot if that fire would have got established. A lot of real estate in front of it going up the hill.
And explain as well, because some people might find this interesting, you had the structure fire, so you had the crews from the agencies there working on that, and you guys worked on the wildland portion of it. Does everybody kind of stick to their own expertise area with that?
On that situation, yeah. So DFPA is not trained or equipped to fight structure fires. So we focus on that wildland portion of it. On the flip side, if it's just strictly a wildland fire, all the fire departments throughout Douglas County have wildfire training. All of them come to our aid when we have fires in their district or the surrounding areas. They're a huge resource for us in the county on a day-to-day basis, helping keep these fires small and all the other calls that they run on.
Now, in the afternoon, you got another fire.
That's right. So late that evening, we had a fire outside of the Till area, about the 10,000 block of South Umpqua Road. That was the Sam Radford fire. So that fire was located between Sam's Creek and Radford Creek. That was a downed power line that sparked that fire. We got pretty lucky there that that fire was in an area that actually burned last year as well. So there was kind of sparse fuels in the area. But that fire was burning for a while before it was detected, kind of a remote area. But we were able to get on that fire pretty quickly and get that taken care of at about a quarter acre.
Two on Saturday, two on Sunday. Talk about the second day of the weekend.
Yeah, so we had a couple more fires yesterday. The first one there was the Reston Road fire out in the 10-mile area. Again, this was a success story for fuels reduction treatments. We'd been in there about 3 years prior and did quite a bit of fuels reduction in the area. These fuels reduction treatments around homes typically leave the larger diameter trees, and we're really focused on getting rid of those ladder fuels, so the underbrush, the blackberries, the poison oak, the young saplings, stuff like that. And then those large trees that are left, we limb those up about 6 to 10 feet off the ground. And the idea there is if a fire comes through, it's not going to stop the fire, but it's going to keep the fire on the ground. It's going to be a lot less intense fire. And that's exactly what we saw out here. This fire stayed on the ground. I think it got up into a couple rotten branches on an oak tree was it. Really low intense fire, burning through the grass and stuff like that, but didn't really get a head of steam behind it thanks to this fuels reduction treatment. So we were able to get this fire knocked down within about 10 minutes of arriving on scene at about a quarter acre, and then it was just a process of getting that fire mopped up and secured.
And then into the evening, right?
Yeah, so we had the another fire yesterday right before crews went off shift around 6:30 or so down in the Azalea area, and that was off of Eakin Road. And that was, again, a power line-related fire. A tree came into the power lines. Luckily, the property owner was there and was able to get that fire knocked down before the fire crews got there at about a tenth of an acre. So we got really fortunate there as well.
So was this your busiest weekend so far?
I don't know if it's been the busiest weekend or not. It's up there if not. We've had a couple fires over weekends that have kept us busy, but definitely this was one of the busier ones.
And doing some driving over the weekend, you just look at the hillsides, you can see the effects of no rain and the hot temperatures.
Yeah, the grass really has that golden glisten to it now. The fuels, the larger diameter fuels are showing it as well. One of the big indicators for me early on this year was the poison oak started changing much earlier than normal. When the poison oak starts getting a red tinge to the leaves, you know that it's consumable. The same with the blackberries. When you start seeing the yellow showing up in the leaves, especially on those older canes, that those are starting to dry out and those are really consumable. So we saw that earlier this year than we typically do. Again, remember, we're 12 and a half inches or so behind normal rainfall throughout the area. And that's, going to contribute to fires going forward.
Along with less rain than normal, what are you seeing on the weather data for the forecast and what's expected for the rest of the month?
Yeah, so short term, obviously we've got this warm weather today. Looking like through the rest of the work week, we'll see kind of normal temperatures, but we're looking at possibly triple digits again next weekend. When you look at the kind of long range forecast from there, they're still calling for above normal temperatures and kind of equal chances for precipitation. But again, we don't get much precipitation in the month of August unless we're experiencing thunderstorms. And when you look at the long-term data, basically between now and October, it's that same trend of, above normal temperatures and then kind of an equal chance for precipitation.
Got to take a break on Inside Douglas County. More when we come back. Kyle Reed of the Douglas Forest Protective Association. The interview, a podcast after one at 541radio.com. 1245 at News Radio 1240, KQEN. inside Douglas County, 1247 at News Radio 1240 KQEN. Lars Larson coming up at 1 o'clock. Kyle Reed of the Douglas Forest Protective Association covering a lot of fire information. Fire out in the Riddle area a little bit ago. How's that looking right now?
So I don't have a size on that right now, but the text I've got here shows that the fire is out. We actually have a fire detection camera up on Silver Butte, which is just outside of Riddle there, and they sent us a picture of that smoke column. So there was a small fire out there. Not sure how big it is, but it's taken care of now.
Explain how these fire detection camera systems work and what you have staff doing in the office.
Yeah, so we started probably about 2007 looking at alternatives to manned lookouts. And the reason was they were very expensive to replace. Ours were aging. So the district manager at the time had the idea of let's look and see if there's a detection system. And it turned out there were a couple out there. So we looked at a couple different systems, one out of Germany and one out of South Africa. And I went with the system there out of South Africa. And started off with, a couple cameras, and by about 2011, we fully converted over to the cameras rather than staffed lookouts. So today we've got about 13 cameras here in our district that cover the Douglas district, and there's about another dozen that are spread out between, or I think there's 15 actually, between Brookings and the Sweet Home area that watch lands that are protected by the Coos Forest Protective Association and the Oregon Department of Forestry. So all those images outside of this area come back into our office, and we're monitoring those for smoke for those districts. And essentially with those cameras, there's a auto detect feature on there, but the human eye is still the best detection out there. So we still have people that are monitoring those cameras. They're looking for the smoke, obviously, but they can take control of the cameras. They can pan, tilt, zoom, do some really cool stuff with those. The other benefit is when we're out in the field, either responding to a fire or say on the weekend when I'm at home, I can pull up those images on the computer or my smartphone and actually look at in real time at what's going on out there.
And obviously the infrastructure costs money, the technology to get, but it's more efficient in terms of not having people at all these individual locations and being able to have a small group of people in the office looking at them at one time.
Yeah, so when we went back originally and we're looking at, the cost between lookouts and cameras, it was about a $300,000 bill to build a new lookout compared to, $50,000 to $80,000 for a camera system from the ground up. So that's part of the reason we went that way. But, out of the 28 cameras that we have there in our office, we have a staff of about five or six people that staff that. So it's really reduced those numbers as well.
So are there people looking at those 24/7 this time of year?
So our cameras are staffed basically during the daylight hours, unless there's a known lightning threat or we get into those a day like this where we have, really hot and dry, windy conditions. We'll extend those later on. So most of the time those cameras are not staffed overnight. But we do, again, have the ability to bring those up remotely and take a look at those areas if we have a report or something like that.
So you talked earlier about the impact of doing some of the work on some of these lands, a couple of them over the weekend, and how that helps you in the future.
Yeah, it's very beneficial for these fuels reduction treatments. So we've done several different kinds of treatments throughout the years. We've done everything from defensible space treatments around homes. We've done landscape treatments on larger scale pieces of areas. A lot of times, both of those are a shaded fuel break type component where we're, leaving the overstory canopy of the large trees, but getting rid of that underbrush, the blackberries, the poison oak, the manzanita, trying to get the grass knocked down, getting rid of the younger saplings, things like that. And by doing that, again, the theory is the fire, if it comes through there, the fuels work won't stop that fire, but it will keep it on the ground. It'll be a much less intense fire due to the fuels that have been removed and the ladder fuels to keep it out of the canopy. And again, that's what we've seen on about three fires this year where we've had fuels work in the area where these fires have taken place.
And I was out in Glide last week on one of our little ice cream runs with the 541 Radio ice cream truck. And I hadn't been out at a Glide in months, but I was looking at some of the land as we were going out there, and it occurred to me that, sometimes you talk about people working on their property, but you also get bigger groups of people that seem to be very, very variable. to where you get whole neighborhoods or sections of a community that kind of work on this together, and it really helps everybody.
Yeah, and that's really what that FireWise USA program is all about. And we've talked about that many times on the air in the past. And that FireWise community is kind of the framework for communities to get ready for wildfire. So through that process, they work with DFPA and the local fire department to identify the risks and hazards in their area. We do a wildfire risk assessment. The community does list some action plans of things that they want to try and mitigate. And a lot of times it's not, we're not going to pave every driveway or the roads that are unpaved, or put a sprinkler on every house or a fire hydrant on every corner. But it's those things that are going to make the difference, like, making sure our gutters are cleaned out annually before fire season, and that the grass is mowed before fire season starts, and that we create defensible space around the home and have address signs that are visible. Those doable things that homeowners can do themselves or as a group, as a community, when we're able to, when social distancing allows so. This FireWise program has helped many communities throughout the area, not only with fire, but also in like the storm event. Those communities already had that framework together and were able to, check on their neighbors. They already knew each other. They had the phone trees and things like that. And it's been a great system for everybody that's been involved.
I would imagine with those connections, even if they, aren't personal friends or something, they at least have phone numbers or emails or both. And you can check on people, or if a fire starts in a certain area, and maybe it's not visible yet, or it's an odd hour, you can shoot messages to people and things like that, and really kind of use the aspect of being a community to look out for each other.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of the communities I've worked with over the years, that's exactly what they've gained from this, that they really enjoy is, a lot of them didn't know their neighbors, and especially beyond their immediate neighbors, had very little knowledge of who it was. So this has allowed them to kind of network, not only with their immediate neighbors, but beyond in the community. And again, when we do this, nobody has to participate, but the participation rate's been very high in the communities that have been through FireWise. We've got communities that have phone trees and email distribution lists. We have Facebook groups and all kinds of ways for people to connect and talk about fire starts and prevention and, asking neighbors for help and all kinds of different things.
So whether it's your neighborhood or a community, if somebody is interested in exploring more about how to get that process started, how do they go about it?
You can call our office here in Roseburg, 541-672-6507, and ask for Kyle Reed, myself. And I'm the kind of the local coordinator for DFPA. I'm the one that's working with those communities to get the program set up and established, and then maintain that going forward.
About a minute and a half left on Inside Douglas County. What are some other things with this hot, dry period that people ought to be doing or not doing?
Well, again, it seems like we've talked about it every time on the radio, but we're still responding to illegal burns. So if people can refrain from burning, campfires, we're seeing those. We had one on the Callahans yesterday that was abandoned. Campfires are only allowed in designated campgrounds right now, with the exception of propane fire pits that are allowed on your own property at a home site. And then we're still seeing burn barrels and debris piles that are people burning almost on a daily basis. So if people can refrain from the illegal burns, that would really help us out a lot right now.
And even this morning, I don't know the details, but just hearing it on the scanner of one in the Hughcrest area this morning, where somebody, I'm not sure what they were disposing of or whatever, but folks in the neighborhood, were seeing smoke and getting concerned about it. And just in terms of tracking that along the scanner, I know that if the incident is connected the way it at least appeared initially, that somebody ended up getting a citation or two out of that too.
Yeah, I don't have any detail on that one specifically. I know we responded to another one out in the Melrose area as well, where that's what the outcome was. So again, please keep from burning, and we'll all be safer.
All right, Kyle Reed of the Douglas Forest Protective Association, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
1257, News Radio 1240, KQEN.
been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.